First, I want to thank whoever or whoever was involved in organizing this this evening. I relish opportunities to speak to parents. I brag about my qualifications being very extensive, all the mistakes that I've made over so many, many years of dealing with my children. It's interesting how my children have often reminded me that my mistakes are mostly with them. In fact, when they don't like something that's going on, they ask me, how come if so-and-so would call, you'd probably know how to give very good advice. But when it comes to your own, that's really the problem. We are so emotionally invested. We're so nogea bedover. We're so passionate about our children that sometimes it's very difficult to see the reality and to know or to be able to do the very things that we could very well advise anybody else to do. So, you know, this is really what we're up against. We're up against the extent of our love and our caring and our emotions. And I think the only way to deal with that, and it's not, never will it be 100% successful, is to prepare ourselves, I would say not just before we have children, but before we go out of the, or before we come into the house, you know, on a daily basis, and refocus on the things that we know are most important in dealing with our children. And that's what I'd like to to try to outline at least this evening. I believe, and I have sound ground and experiences for feeling this way, that the most important element of our dealing with our children is to raise happy children. One who raises happy children, it's like, you know, everything else will fall in place. That doesn't mean there won't be challenges, that doesn't mean there won't be problems, that doesn't mean there won't be disappointments. But happy children just seem to be able to just get there, do that, make it happen. And the biggest problem I've always found, and I always talk about this, is that people are not sure what happiness is. And since we're not sure what it is, we sometimes don't really know how to recognize it, how to inspire it, how to assure it, how to deal with it. And I think it's very important to have a real definition of happiness before we can really think of going any place. And we're very fortunate in that we have a language, the Lashon HaKodesh, which is not arbitrary like any other language. People agree to call things by certain names. But the three-letter root of the word literally defines the concept. Osher, the root being Aleph Shin Resh, is probably the highest form of happiness. And the shirish of that word means Yeshua, validation. Happiness is about one's feeling good about him or herself. That's the ultimate. If I feel good about myself, anything else is almost irrelevant, if not, you know, just tangential. I feel good about myself. And if I feel good about myself all the time, then I'm always happy. And everything else will fall into place, will work out, will be able to deal with because I am feeling good about myself. And I guess then that the primary goal of parenting should be creating an environment and effecting in our children this sense of validation, this sense of feeling good about themselves. And there are so many ways that we can do it. And there are so many ways that we can undo it. And as parents, unfortunately, we tend to do both. Do it? Well, we know that love validates, because the definition of love is a appreciation of the qualities of the person that we love. It's the notion of the sipurnu sheyismach oyev b'mala saneahav. So if I love someone, that means I appreciate their qualities. If I appreciate their qualities, that's validating. It means I have qualities. I have appreciable qualities that people, and especially people that are significant people in my life, can appreciate. That's great. That makes a person feel good about themselves. And that is very important. However, parental love is limited when it comes to validation. And that's because of the fact that it's a little bit genetic. Of course, I have to love my child. I hope nobody here ever gets to a situation which we hear often, is that, oh, I love my kid, I just don't like him. And you hear that often today. That's not a joke. It's people that, shocking as it may seem, you know, they're recognizing the inherent, the natural, the genetic love that's there. But you know, the way this kid acts, can't stand him. And that's, of course, a terrible thing, because that communicates. But love of a parent is limited because of the fact that it's natural. And therefore, it doesn't say with that full impact how great you are, how much I appreciate you, how many qualities you have, because truth is, I have to love you, and I will love you, and I'm programmed to love you even without all the qualities. So this is just validating. However, as parents, we have a unique ability to invalidate our children. Oh, we can do great. Just put them down. Just keep criticizing them. Just keep screaming at them. Just keep telling them that this is no good and that is no good and the other thing is no good. And it's amazingly invalidating. Why? Because here this person who's pre-programmed to love me speaks to me in such a way. And therefore, criticism and putting down our children is probably the ultimate weapon against their feeling good about themselves, against their validation, against their happiness. Ad kedei kach, that we find that Rashi says, beginning of Parshas Dvorim, that Yaakov Avinu apologized to Reuven for not having reprimanded him before he went on his deathbed, because he was afraid that had he reprimanded him, he would leave him and connect with his brother Esav. Yaakov, who would certainly know how to reprimand in the gentlest way, to Reuven the tzaddik, who had already done tshuva for what his mistake was, who was afraid that if he did it not on the deathbed, which seems to be easier to handle, he might leave him to join with no one less than Esav. Mind-boggling, that's what Rashi says. But criticism is a very... We do have to teach. We have to educate our children. We have to guide our children. But I don't even think it's enough to do what they say in the world of parenting and psychology. Never criticize the child, only the action. I would say even when you criticize the action, the kid is smart enough to pick up that you're criticizing the child. So what you have to do is just avoid as much as possible. And alteratze odom b'shas kasri, Chazal say, the worst time to educate is at the moment of contention. The moment of contention, if you could find a way not to see certain things. In fact, we tell teachers, you know, the first skill a classroom teacher should know is what not to see and what not to hear. Because once you hear or once you see, sometimes you have to react, sometimes you're tempted to react, sometimes you can't control yourself from reacting, and it could be very dangerous. But certainly, wherever possible, if we have to, and we have to teach our children right from wrong, at a different time, in a conversation, not right after it happened, and certainly not by putting the person down. And maybe finding some indirect way to communicate the lesson, talking about something else. The Chofetz Chaim gave tremendous musar. Dubna Magid gave tremendous musar. Dubna Magid was the only person who gave musar to the Vilna Goyim. All with Misholim. Animals about, all kinds of things. But because it's not direct. As indirect as we could be, as around about, so as not to invalidate that person, but yet at the same time to educate. I think this is very, very critical, this sense of feeling good about themselves. Now, younger kids really are not going to get this lesson, but I think as parents, we have to know, and as the kids get a little bit older, we have to find a way to teach them that happiness and pleasure are not synonymous. In fact, happiness and pleasure are really, in a sense, opposites. Why? Because if happiness is about feeling good about myself, the dependency and the need and the addiction and the obsession with indulgence in pleasure, really, when I think about it, and subtly and subconsciously, even when I don't think about it, really sends a very negative message. I'm dependent to be okay in my day or my night or my week or my year or my life on so many outside things outside of myself. That sends the message that inside I'm really trash. Inside I'm really worthless. Inside I'm really nothing. Because I need all of that. I need all of that. Now that's a subtle message. Don't try that message with your 2-year-old or with your 3-year-old. Probably not with your 4-year-old or your 5-year-old. But as they get a little bit older, they have to get that message. And it's a real message. Pleasure is not everything. It's not what it's about. It's temporary. It's very fleeting. Each time you indulge in the same pleasure, you get less and less pleasure from it because the sense and the sensation and the enjoyment is dull. Something else about pleasure, which is interesting. I don't give them a whole lecture like this, but the mind plays games with us. It, in retrospect, it makes us think that the pleasure was greater than it was. So pleasures are always diminished because my mind made me think that it was much greater than it was. In reality, the sensitivity was dulled, and therefore I'm having less pleasure. So I'm thinking it was more, and I'm having less than it really was, and certainly less that the mind has fooled me into thinking that it was. It makes people frustrated, but that's not for them. But the Maisa, they should know that it's not about pleasure. It's about feeling good about themselves. When the most important people in our lives, and maybe we should talk about that for a moment. Children today have a lot of chutzpah. Children today are not those respectful little beings that used to be 100 years ago, that the word parent was like, ooh. Today, where they learn it, I don't know. I hope they don't learn it from us the way we talk to our parents, but that's besides the point. But they get this message, and it gives us the sense that we don't mean that much to them. And nothing can be further from the truth. The parents will always, forever remain the most important people in their lives. And our approval, and our respect, and our love, and our caring, and our involvement in their lives, no matter how much they attempt or seem on the outside to reject, is very critical for them. Is really the base, the anchor in their lives in this world. And that's, I think, very important to keep in mind, especially when they're abusing us, which, at what age they start abusing today, parents? And I'm sure they all started already. It's just the way it is. So, but we are that important, and they need our love, they need our respect, they need our support. And I'd like to talk for a moment about respect, too. Because respect is really the best means that parents have to validate their children. Love is limited, but respect says so much about who I am. You respect my opinion. You respect my space. You respect my time. You respect my feelings. That includes my toys and my room and my privacy. I must be choshev. And that message of I must be choshev, derived not by a speech of, oh, you're the smartest, greatest thing in the world, but discovered by the way you act with me, the self-esteem and the validation just can soar, and that really is what we have to be able to convey to our children. I'd like to talk a little bit about discipline. Discipline is a big problem, especially in a world of total hefkeros. If any kid ever listens to the news, if any kid has any inkling about what's going on out there, if anybody is exposed almost to anything that's going on in our society today, this whole sense of right and wrong, of rules and regulations, of appropriate and inappropriate behavior is like, it's almost non-existent. I mean, the English language is root-based, as is the Lashon HaKodesh. But the root of the word discipline is disciple. Disciple means student. It's about teaching. It's not about controlling. We can't control our kids. Today, by the way, as they get a little bit older, I would say about 7, 8, 9, they have a new weapon that they never had before. If they don't like the way we're dealing with them, they say, bye-bye, I'm going off the derech. And they start, at about that age, they start using that either in words or in actions or in emotions. So we don't have any control. Little babies, I don't know how much we have control either. So it's really about teaching. About teaching. Now, for teaching, I think it's important to keep a couple of principles of teaching in mind. Number one, people don't have infinite capacity to learn. So a few concepts that are really important is probably the best disciplinary system. We have three things. We have four things. We have five things. I don't know if anybody can handle more than that. These are the main rules. This is what it is. This is the stuff we try to make sure that they adhere to. This is the stuff that we discipline them in terms of disciple, explain to them the importance of, and show them the importance of, and model these behaviors for them, which is extremely important, because if we model other behaviors, those are the ones that they will emulate, and that's not exactly what we want. So all of these things, I think, you have a few, and they're important, and they understand. They're logical, they're rational. The conversation that we all used to hear, and I hope we don't hear it too often, is, why can't I do this? Because I said so. Because the next line usually, it used to be, who are you? Now today it's, who do you think you are? And before you know it, it's screaming and yelling and nothing accomplished. So why is a valid question, and we have to be able to give good answers. And the rules and the basic things that the expectations, I like to call them better than rules. Today, even in our society, rules is a harsh word. But the expectations that we have, those few major important expectations, those have to be rational, and they have to be explained, and sometimes they have to be explained again and again and again. And eventually, there are certain things that, if we choose well, suited for our own situation, our own family situation, and the dynamics in our home, we can end up having. And once a person gets used to the concept of there are things that must be done, or there are things that can't be done, that spreads. Then the mechanism, the mental connections of having something that You just don't do this. We don't do this, and there's nothing to talk about. It's not viable, and it's not negotiable, and that can spread to other things too. And I think that's an important important point to keep in mind. I think that we should be aware of one of the problems that we have in the religious community, especially the yeshiva community, is that in a world where anything goes and everything goes and you can do whatever you want, our kids feel oftentimes very restricted. I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do the other thing. And especially when they enter the yeshiva world where they're really expected to be squeezed into one mold, and you know that one size or one mold fits all seems to be a motto in the world out there. And in reality, the truth is, one size or one mold fits none. And that's really the problem. So there is going to be this sense of almost like I'm not a person, I'm not an individual. So therefore, we have to try to orchestrate as many choices as we possibly can. Anytime we could ask their opinion, give them a choice, let them have input, let them decide between two things. I understand parents of little girls, I don't know, boys do it too, sometimes at the age of two, put out three pieces of clothing in the morning and say, which one would you like to wear today? Something seemingly as meaningless as that. But it gives me the sense that I have choices. That's why I believe, and I can't speak against it because I understand the reasons for it, but this business with uniforms is not so push it. I understand what it does accomplish, but what it also accomplishes in a negative way is that I can't have any individual expression in my dress, which, you know, of course, some people express very bizarre things in their dress, but we have to be able to, you know, we have to find ways that our kids could find expression of their uniqueness, of their individuality, of their own personalities, and very important for that sense of feeling good about myself. I think that there's something else which is, well, it's like a two-part issue, which I think is very critical. One is, do we get involved emotionally with our children? We love our children, but are we involved in a meaningful way in their pain, in their happiness, in their worries, in their concern? How deeply, you know, the little kids love that. You know, some psychologists, or maybe it's a common thing, once pointed out that if your kid is playing with something like this, in his mind, he's playing with the city of New York, and the whole, everything that goes on in the city of New York is taking place over here, and he's the one responsible for it. So when you make nothing of it, or you, you know, what are you doing in it? There's real stuff. But do we really enter into their world and feel together with them their emotions? I have one, just actually wrote about it, so I have a vivid memory now. But I remember coming home once in Los Angeles and looking at something in the mail or something, one of my kids tugging on my shirt and saying a terrible thing happened to school today. And I said, oh, I'm so happy for you, you know, what a wonderful thing. And then the other one, a few minutes later, is pulling and says, a wonderful thing happened, and not willing to make the same mistake again. I says, oh, I feel so terrible for you, you know. And of course, you know, pay attention. Listen. Empathetic listening means I feel with you. And I feel sorry for you, that sympathy. But I feel with you. He's telling me about the whole city of New York broke down today. Mamish, it's affected millions of people all with that move. But that's your world. And I have to feel that. And when you do, besides forging a deep relationship, but you make me feel good about myself because my emotions are real. My emotions are valid. My emotions are the concern of the most important person in my life. So I think that's also something which is very necessary in fostering, developing that environment. Ad kan, we could be speaking to secular, non-Jewish, any audience. But we have a much more serious responsibility. We aren't satisfied just with raising kids that can stay out of jail. That's not our goal in parenting. We want to instill a Messiah that has come to us over 3,329 years, actually even before our Sinai from Avraham Avinu, and pass that on to future generations through our children affecting their children, and so forth and so on. That's no easy task. And just by the basics of parenting, it's not going to happen automatically. There's just an article written, I think it was in the OU's magazine, I think it's called Action, about, I guess, the lack of feeling and passion and involvement with Hashem that exists in the world today, in the religious world today. And I think it isn't only in that strain of orthodoxy, but it's throughout. And we as parents have a unique opportunity and responsibility to connect our children from the youngest age with Hashem. But there's a very interesting thing over there, because at a young age, they seem to connect well. In fact, I always felt that the kids at a very young age have a more realistic connection to Hashem than maybe as then they get older than the parents, but they lose it someplace along the way. I wonder if we're not part of the responsibility for them losing it, because maybe we're not as into it and as involved in it as or enough to really spill over and continually inspire them. It's an age-old problem. The Novi Yeshaya talks about it. But the Yesod seems to be the heart. It's the heart connecting with Hashem. We as parents have to be able to use every opportunity that we have. Brochos shouldn't be a place to fight, but rather an opportunity to appreciate and to connect with Hashem. Everything, every pleasure, everything we have, Chazal will mesachin a brocha so that we recognize that this is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we appreciate His chesed. Hashkocha protis. If you can nurture your children on Hashkocha protis, think about it made. Hashkocha protis means they recognize that Hashem is actively involved in every aspect of their lives, of their family's lives. And if it can go back to the parents, the grandparents, the great-grandparents, anything that's closer to home is much more effective than stories that you read about people that you don't know. And sometimes you wonder whether the stories are true too. But it's real. It's me. It's us. I love to tell the story about a young man who was, this was many, many years ago, was, those days they didn't call them off the derech. They used to call them yeshiva bums. That was the terminology. He was the yeshiva bum. And he was, you know, wild, nice guy, smart, nice, but wasn't interested in the whole thing. And the yeshiva had a contest for the best personal story of Hashgacha Pratis that anyone could bring in. And there was a panel to judge, and there was $100. This is like 30 years ago, I don't know. Reward for the best story. This guy went home, $100, the story didn't interest him at the time, I don't think. Went home, and he found out that in 1944, as the Nazis were about to invade Budapest, his grandparents, with four young children, had to make a critical decision. Hide or run? Hiding was very dangerous because the Nazis would ferret out everybody. Running was a problem because as they would come to the border, they had passports, but they didn't have transit visas, which means they wouldn't be allowed into out of Hungary into the next country. But they decided they're getting on a train and they're going to run. Everything was fine on the train until they pull into the Hungarian border. Now this is where the trouble begins. Border guards come on, checking everybody's papers. They're right before their compartment. An old man with a long white beard, that's the way they described it, and I spoke to the uncles who were children then and there, they confirmed the story, sits down right next to them. The border guard comes by. The old man pulls out papers. The border guard looks at the papers. He looks at the family, gives him back his papers. He walks on. The old man disappears. I don't know where he went. And the whole family is here to tell the story today. This kid was so taken by Hashem's involvement in his life. He's alive today because of this blatant miracle, because of this unbelievable story, which he knew from his father and his uncles that it really happened. It changed his whole life. And this is what we have to nurture our kids on Hashem as a reality and Hashem's involvement in our lives as a reality and Hashem's caring for us as a reality and Hashem's love for us as a reality and Hashem's chesed in everything he does as the ultimate reality. And here comes, I think, something else that we could address for a moment, which could interfere with our children's spiritual growth, and that is suffering. There's a lot of suffering that goes on in the world, and children are not immune to it personally, and they're certainly not immune to hearing about it, and being in contact with it in terms of grandparents, in terms of, you know, things happen. All kinds of things happen. And bishas the suffering, when a person is distraught, it's very hard to start to talk to them about what Hashem loves you and his chesed. And, like this Hungarian rabbi once said, somebody came to him and he said, I'm suffering so much. Why? What does Hashem want from me? So he says, no, you don't understand this, Hashem. You are Hashem Yochiach. Hashem reprimands the ones that he loves. So he says, I understand that, Rabbi. But tell me, why doesn't he love my neighbor a little bit more? This is not enough. This is not the time to tell him how much Hashem loves them or all about Hashem's chesed. It's a little bit not the right time. What we have to do to be able to enable them to cope with the challenges and the difficulties of life, which invariably and inevitably they will be exposed to at some point, is to nurture them on Hashem's chesed before. That Hashem's chesed is taken for granted, that everything Hashem does is for the good, that he understands everything that goes on, and we may not understand everything, we try our best to understand, but there are things that are beyond us. And his track record is so impressive in this, that, and the other thing he's done and he continues to do for each and every one of us every single day, so that when the time comes that I get a little bit disillusioned, I can maintain the course. I don't have to be overwhelmed. I don't have to give up. I don't have to throw in the towel because I know about the chesed and I don't understand it. I'm not happy with it. Maybe upset, maybe angry. Intellectually, at least I know I've had enough experience with his lesson to be able to cope with this. I think this is something that's I think a very, very critical ingredient in life. Another poshita ingredient, which I'm sure that we're all aware of, is the turnoff. They used to say that the turnoff of those so many Jews at the beginning of the last century was because when they, of course, they really didn't have yeshivas, and a lot of these kids from religious families went to public school, and so it was really, you know, they had nothing much for them. But when they would ask, why can't I go out with my friends on Shabbos, and why can't I eat over here, and why can't I do this? And when the answer was, it's shteit geschriben in the Torah. That's the way it is. Lama? Kacha. It doesn't wash. That's not enough. And it they have to have some sense of, I understand the benefits for what I'm doing. The Ralbag says that even Avraham Avinu, before Hashem told him to do a bris, he didn't tell him that there's an operation involved, that there's a knife involved. He first told him about how he's going to have generations coming forth and he'll inherit Eretz Yisrael, and only then, with the benefits, mitigating the pain of what he's going to have to do, would he tell Avraham Avinu that yes, there's an operation involved. That could have affected even Avraham Avinu. Our children have to have a sense of the benefits. The benefits, what we do is beneficial. We gain. If they want to know why we do something, they have to get an explanation. If we don't know why they do it, we can say we don't know, but we'll find out. It's a very, if we create an atmosphere where the Yadus makes sense to them and they understand that it's all beneficial and it's all for our benefit, that's one thing. But there's another statement that turned off more people, maybe even more than the shteit geschriben in the Torah. And that is the krechts. Oy, se shverz as ein ayid. Oh, how difficult it is to be a Jew. I still remember hearing the old Jews. I think it was a snowy Shabbos morning where this poor Jew had to pull off his boots that were up to here, and he couldn't do it, you know. Oh, se shverz as ein ayid. He may even have been joking, but it left a ration. Nobody wants Schwerkeit. Nobody wants difficulties. Everybody wants fun, pleasure, privilege. It should not, nothing should seem burdensome and difficult to us. And certainly we can't talk that way and convey that attitude. They have to look at Yiddishkeit as a privilege. A privilege. We are privileged. Asher kidishonu b'mitzvayisav, Hashem elevated us from all the umos ha'olam and gave us these privileges. And even the Vitzivonu is a privilege. He commanded us. But what a command does, Chazal tell us, is Godel HaMetzuva V'yoseh V'mishe'enu Metzuva V'yoseh. By the fact that we're commanded, and therefore there's more resistance, the Yetzirah resists more, so we get even more schar. So Hashem just wants to benefit us. And to recognize that it's all for our good, and it's all good, and it's all privilege, and it's not burden, and it's real, I think this is also a very... very basic concept. It's late, and just a couple of brief comments also. One of the most serious complaints / excuses, probably more complaint than excuse, that we hear today from kids who got messed up is the pressure, the endless and intense and abusive pressure that they feel. And the strange thing is, they feel it from parents, they feel it from yeshiva, and they may even feel it when we don't put pressure on them. First of all, we don't realize how much pressure we do put on them. But even when we don't, because it's in their mind, they internalize this pressure. The very sense of an obligation and responsibility to Hashem is a tremendous pressure. And I always like to say, sometimes when people don't succeed in the yeshiva, say, go to work. And they go to work, and they turn around. They can even come back many times to the yeshiva, and they do well. And I think it's really very simple. Work also is pressure. You have a job, you have to come, you have to get up on time, you have to be there, you have to work, you have to perform, you can't leave early. But the pressure is bearable. Because the worst case scenario is you get fired and you get another job. What do you do when you fail with Hashem? Where are you going to go? These kids are too smart to go to another religion. It's not going to happen. So what are they going to do? The pressure is enormous. And they induce the pressure on them. They put the pressure on themselves, and we also pressure them. Be very careful. Limit, limit, limit pressure. Pressure cookers explode. And they explode in a mean and ugly way. So we have to, you know, there's anything we can do to avoid pressure. And by the way, explanations for what we do limits pressure. Appreciating Hashem's love, that it's all beneficial for us, limits pressure. Respect and love and that we show them limits pressure, motivates rather than pressurizes. Whatever we can do to limit pressure is a very, I think, a most critical ingredient. I'd just like to maybe mention two more things and maybe, you know, if there's any discussion. And that is, number one, excitement in learning. The learning has to be exciting. The learning has to be exciting. If the learning is not exciting, fun. A melamed, a cheder melamed, once taught me in Yerushalayim when I was leaving for the summer, taking my kids home. So he said, I want to teach you what it's about to teach. He says, Lulei teros chashashuoy. I remember he says, it makes a difference whether you're learning Aleph Beis or Rambam. Rambam Beis was like the highest you could go. It has to be a delight. It has to be fun. It has to be enjoyable. Lectures are not enjoyable. Force is not enjoyable. Criticism is not enjoyable. How many kids mouth, and this is maybe more for the husbands, but maybe mothers are also guilty sometimes, mouthing, my father just learns with me to see how much I know. He's always testing me, and all it is pressure. We advise fathers, if you learn with your kid, which you should, learn something that they're not learning at school, so the kid doesn't feel that he's on the, he's being watched, he's being pressured, he's being supervised, he's being tested. So it has to be an enjoyable experience, and whatever we can do. And if the school is not creating an enjoyable experience, create it at home in the learning. Get a tutor, get a mentor, do something, compensate. Ultimately, parents have to be the caseworkers for their children and can't take for granted that anybody out there is doing what they're supposed to be doing. Some do, some don't, but we can't take it for granted. We have to be alert. And when it's missing, we have to substitute. I'd like to add one more thing, and that is... I said one more, I had two more. One is questions. We have to have an environment at home where kids feel free to ask questions. When they can't ask questions, then a few terrible things happen. They're invalidated because my questions are not important or not intelligent. They're suspicious that we really don't have answers to their questions. Therefore, the seeds of drifting and rebellion and disenfranchisement have been planted because they get this sense of, I don't know is a legitimate answer if we make an effort to find out as soon as possible. But questions, it should be an open environment where people are free to talk. Otherwise, there'll be things that are deeply rooted and we won't find out about them until years later, and that's terrible. And the last thing I'd like to mention is that sometimes people need outside intervention. And we as parents have to be very sensitive to watch for that, to see that. On the one hand, educators can see it a little more because they see 15, 20, 25 kids of the same age group and see this one seems to be acting a little bit different, a little strange, and that's a problem. But on the other hand, they got 15, 20, 25 kids and they may not notice everything. A parent, although we don't necessarily remember how the kid before acted at this age, but we have a sense of something's off. This, the anger, the tantrums, the language, the crying, the depression. We have to be ready to get help. I think that we're fortunate, we're blessed today, that there are mental health professionals that are capable of helping us and are fully committed to the values and the lifestyle that we have. I would say that it's almost a crime. There's always exceptions where nothing can be done. But to have a therapist, social worker, psychologist that is not of your hashkofa and commitments to work with the child, because they will influence the child in a different direction. If there's a need for a psychiatrist, also that's lechatchila, but they usually they don't get enough involved in the details. It's just more the psychiatric issues and medication. So even if it isn't a person with the same hashkofa, but we should not, the busha is not there anymore. Nobody is embarrassed. Everybody talks about my therapist, my two therapists, you know, my this. Everyone is, in certain communities now, they talk about their canine therapist, you know, the dogs have therapists too. So, like, it's important as parents that we. Okay, those are some thoughts that, I don't know, I hope maybe some of them will be helpful. Any dissenting opinions? That's always a good place to start. Come on. Okay.
The Rebbe mentioned something about not pressuring, and sometimes kids feel pressure even if we don't pressure them. So let's say a kid, I guess older, not like 10 or 12.
By the way, no matter how old they are, they become 10 or 12 very quickly. It's, believe me, before you know it, you'll be a great-grandmother.
Okay. They feel the pressure and they come to a parent with a question. And a shkafa, let's say girls with skirts or boys with going to davening, basic things. What are you supposed to say? You can't tell them you could not cover your knees or you could not go to davenings in order not to pressure them.
Yeah, no. See, again, that's. I'm glad you mentioned that. Not pressuring and not educating are two different things. There are pleasant and respectful and sweet ways to tell our children what they have to do without creating this intense atmosphere. It's very interesting that Rashi at the end of Koheles, on the posuk that everybody knows, Soif Dovra Koel Nishma Eselekim Yiro Ves Mitzvosov Shemor Kizek Kol Olam, Rashi says, what is Yiro Eselekim Elekim Yiro? Mashituch HaLaseh L'Libcho LaShemayim. You do the best you can. Your heart has to be focused on coming closer to Hashem and getting better and better. And I think things have to be framed in that way, that, listen, I understand that there's a problem, I understand that it's difficult, we have to work on it, and we'll work on it together. There are temptations, there are challenges, you know, in terms of dress, it depends which schools they go to, but most schools today, not everybody is, you know, living up to the standards 100%, and I have to say, you know, that, We have to. It can't be. You got to do it. You're going to burn. Nobody's going to burn. Don't threaten anybody to burn. You know, and don't talk to them about rewards in the next world. Everything is in this world. And give them pride. You see, tznius can be presented as a pride thing. And it's. I mean, it's more than the scope that we have right now for time. But it can be presented as a pride. Called kvuda basmelech pnima. You know, just to give you an inkling, but it's not really a partial picture. The Meiri says that a father, the halacha is a father's luchiv to teach his son a trade. Okay, a mother is excused. Why? Because kol kvudo basmelech pnima. Why? What does that mean? What's the lack of tznius by having her son a trade? So it seems. Let's say the Queen of England would want to register her son in Oxford. She wouldn't go stand on the line at the registrar's office. She would summon the chancellor or whoever it is to the palace and, you know, I want you to register my son. There's such a thing that a woman is even excused from being concerned with teaching her child, making sure her child has a trade, a profession. Why? Because of Bas Melech. The Habsburgs, when they rode amongst commoners, I'm not sure what that meant, but as the Austrian dynasty, I think, they had to have the curtains of the carriage closed. The commoners couldn't look at the royalty. I'm not, you know, getting into that, but the idea, this is royalty. This is, you know, the body is a very private thing, and showing it off to people is belittling. I mean, you know, there's books about it. I don't know too much about that. But I'm just saying, but we have to do it in such a positive way. Yes, they have to know. This is what you have to do. And the other thing is, when they don't do it, you don't get bent out of shape. You have to find just the right balance between not letting them think that we're condoning inappropriate behavior, but not overwhelming them with reprimand that they resent it and they feel so pressurized, and all it does. Remember, pressure produces a reverse reaction. You push this way, then I push back. So that's...
Is there a general way to deal with lying with kids? Or is it a very specific...
No. First,
case by case.
The first thing is we got to be very careful. You know, that's the famous story that somebody told, and it circulated all over, that the kid told his parent a lie, and the father screaming and yelling at him. This, all of a sudden, there's a mashulach at the door, and the kid says, tells his wife, says, tell him I went to Hawaii. You know what I mean? So you can't, we have to say, an example goes a long way. You know, that's one thing. But the other thing is that when we rather than criticize, this bechlal is a good, rather than criticize when somebody falls short, it's to reward when they, you had an assayin, and you were embarrassed, and you told the truth. Or somebody else told it. You have a story, somebody told the truth under, somebody just told me something today, but I forgot what it was, under such conditions, and you say, wow. Kid sees, the kid gets values from us. And when it comes in as a value, it helps them cope with the temptation of lying. And when you do have to reprimand, I think you have to keep in mind the following. Sometimes the stronger you come across, the more they have to deny that it was serious. The more straightforward, hey, we don't do that. That's not what we can't. Really, the truth of the matter is, you can explain to people, lying is something that destroys human relations. Because if you could lie to me, I can't have a relationship. I don't know who I'm talking to. You lie. Who? I believe that's the reason that Mipnei HaSholem, that you're allowed to be Mishana. Because since the whole purpose, or one of the purposes, is to keep human relations appropriate, so if the telling the truth is going to breach the relationship more, then you're even allowed to be Mishana for that purpose. Because it's about, you can't have a relationship with people. Nobody wants to. You won't have any friends if you're a liar. People don't want. And it become, but again, it's not you. It's not you and your kid. It's education. It's in general. People don't like liars. People like truth. You can't have a relationship. A liar is like somebody wearing a mask. I don't know who I'm talking to. I don't know who my friend is. It's a process. And the other thing is, I think that's an important thing too. It's a process. Don't expect too much too fast from anybody. But gradually, keep in mind, you see the areas of weakness and you work on educating.
Rabbi Cohen mentioned that we should differentiate between happiness and pleasure, but it seems very hard in a world where pleasure is so everyone wants pleasure. Like, there's pleasure available in school, everyone compares. Oh, I got this, and I got this toy. So how do we do it?
Well, so I just today gave a little talk about that in the context of something else, and I reminded myself of an incident that happened many years ago. I was in Miami, and someone took us to the Sarah's, some Hilchika restaurant, and they introduced me to a drink called Pina Colada. I've never heard of Pina Colada before, and I liked it. Very good. Subsequently, I was at a wedding, a bar mitzvah, this, and someone suggested, make more pina colada. So we did. Nah, they don't know how to make pina colada like Sarah. Another one, no, they don't know how to, these are some fancy places too, the Marina del Rey, and here, they don't know how to make pina colada like Sarah. Finally, about 4 years later, I was back at Sarah's. And of course, the first thing I ordered is pina colada. Sarah doesn't know how to make pina colada like Sarah's. And I explained to them, I said, the first time, wow, you never had this experience. Next time, every physical pleasure, the taste buds or the sensitivity to it dulls. So nothing measures up to the original one. And even when you go back, you think, because they don't know how to do it. But no, it's because you lost that thing. And more than that, I mentioned this before, but this again is not for younger kids. The mind fools us and exaggerates pleasures. In retrospect, we think a pleasure was much greater than it was, because that's the way we preserve it. And that's all because of the fact that it goes so fast that we have to preserve it. How do we preserve it? By this imagination. So you're competing against a diminishing pleasure measured against an exaggerated memory. Never make you happy. So I tell this story, and again, I can't tell this to a two-year-old, you know, but you tell them, and people get it. It doesn't pleasure. And they see, point it out to them, let them see themselves. Wow, and what do you have from it? You know, I've done this many times. I ask people to remember the meal that they enjoyed the most memorable meal that they've ever had. And I get two meals from most people, the wedding and the Pesach Seder with the family together, you know, like when they're in the grandparents' house or whatever, something like that. And the reason for that is because there's more than just physical culinary pleasure. They have to understand that when you combine the two, why is cholent so, everybody goes nuts for cholent? You know, and the chiddush is even on Thursday night. It's the Shabbos dick of food. Even if it's not on Shabbos, but there's something about the, because there's something religious, there's something spiritual, there's something lasting, and kids can understand this, and they see the thing you're so excited about, and then it's all over. Now what? Or you don't talk to the kid because he doesn't want to admit it. Talk about yourself. He said, "I looked forward to this ice cream. I was waiting. This is the special they just made. This blah 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 blah, and it's all over." And when they start hearing that, they pick it up. And again, education is best, the best word for education is discovery, when they discover it on their own, rather than when you shove it in their face. Because when you shove it in their face, there's resistance. When they hear, they see, they pick it up, they surmise. People who get this message, even kids, little kids, it's harder. As they get older, they get it more. But I think it's doable. Okay, thank you very much
thank
for the
so
privilege. Hatzlocha.